Looking back, if we had to point to just one thing that helped us as successful real estate investors, it would have very little to do with our natural born intellect or academic achievement. No, what made our real estate investing experience a successful one was the fact that we could manage the cost of ownership if needed. Our ability to comfortably carry the second mortgage was a greater contributor to our success than our ability to find properties and analyze deals. And this wouldn't have been possible had we not spent the early part of our careers living frugally to pay down debt. If we'd chosen to move into a larger home and purchase new vehicles instead, we wouldn't have had the surplus cash to make a down payment, and our creditworthiness would have been less attractive to lenders.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. And today we're rounding out part two of our Inside Cashing Out series. This is the first time we've ever done a two-part podcast series.
We've done
multi-part versions of every other medium, I think.
Yeah.
Videos,
and
blogs.
I mean, two parts feels like a cop-out. Like,
it does.
We probably should have done like four parts, I guess.
Yeah, we did, but we didn't want to belabor the point, right?
Yeah, so, and we have it on other channels.
Absolutely, but I'm really excited about this one. And speaking of excited, I want to give a shout out to Ed Kwan. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. Edquan. He's the only person that I know of who was listening to the previous episode. I believe you said he listened to it like three times and actually counted the amount of times we said excited. And so we are people of our word. We are going to send you a free copy of our book. Thank you so much for being as excited as we are about this, about the book. And also I want to give you a shout out because Geminis rule the world. We're the most creative people out here, and he's a fellow Gemini. And so from one Gemini man to another, thank you very much.
Yeah, his note was funny because he started with a little roast about how excited he was for the book. Yeah, we said that word more times than I care to admit, but it's real.
Yeah.
This episode releases on June 13th, which is a Monday. So if you're listening to it on release day, the book will be out tomorrow, which is great. But if you are a late listener, our book is already out, and it is the perfect Father's Day gift, especially for the man who already has everything.
Yeah, which is, I think that's a dope Chance the Rapper song, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, really?
To get something like that. It's a pretty good song. But yeah, like get dad something more than the mug, right? Like return the mug. We're good on mugs.
Father's Day gifts are so cliche.
We don't need another plaque.
It's like all golf themed.
I think we're
plaques,
fine. Plenty
coffee,
of socks.
Grill accessories.
Yeah, listen, replace his underwear and get him a copy or two of Cashing In. Yeah, that's what dads really, really want. So, okay. So, as I said, this is part two. And what we really wanted to do with this particular episode is offer like a little sample.
Yes.
I feel like maybe you're at the mall right now. Would you like to try a little sample? Costco style, right?
Yeah.
But it's really cool because we're actually, in addition to doing this podcast, we're also recording, or we've also recorded, I should say, some video excerpts. And so if you like the idea of kind of hearing or watching us read the book and then kind of reacting to what we've read, even though we wrote it, but we are truly going to react to it. That's what we're offering in those excerpts. We're going to do a little bit of that here today. So if you kind of want a visual layer of that, you can head on over to our YouTube channel, subscribe there. And by the date this podcast is released, you'll see a few other of those excerpt videos as well, just to give you a little bit of a sample or a tasting of Cashing Out. So why don't we go ahead and jump in?
You're
going to start?
That's cute. A little tasting menu. Yeah, I'm going to start. So this first excerpt is from chapter two, which is called Rich and Regular. And in it, we tell the story of the first time we went to Camp Fi, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's like adult sleepaway camp for people interested in financial independence. But we were talking with the campers, and this part is about the first time that we learned a new term, which is stealth wealth, and our reaction. So this is on page 38, if you happen to have your book in front of you and you want to read along. All right. While chatting, one of the campers used the term stealth wealth. He spoke about financial security, helping family members whenever he wanted, and enjoying his job, but not feeling pressured to keep it. To him, having stealth wealth implied you were doing well by all standards, but you displayed little, if any, outward appearances of excessive wealth. His wealth was real, measurable, and growing without his lifting a finger, but it was also hardly noticeable to the naked eye. It was certainly unlike the mass-produced images of wealth portrayed in the media. After all, he drove a Subaru hatchback and wore simple athleisure and a dingy pair of New Balance sneakers. His wealth wasn't a game of show and tell, and when it was shown, it was visible through the freedoms and conveniences he enjoyed, not the things he consumed. We were in love. To understand why stealth wealth is so important, you first need to fundamentally believe your money can work harder than you can. Despite the unfortunate stereotypes that have plagued our community for years, we are incredibly hardworking and resilient people. In fact, the legacy of the United States is built on the value of our ancestors' labor. But our community's attachment to that narrative has caused us to overvalue our work ethic. We've been so conditioned to work hard that we don't recognize that there are several other ways to earn income that don't require never-ending, back-breaking work.
There's a lot.
There's a lot there.
There's a lot.
There is.
To unpack there.
I think the thing that we should unpack first is recognizing what it's not.
Yeah. I completely agree. And so a couple of things come to mind when I think about stealth wealth, and more often than not, it's particular people at moments in time. And so that particular moment, even as you were writing it, I was transported to where we were in Florida, sitting on the patio, and he looked exactly like what we described. Yeah. I think our publisher actually got us to like remove some of the
other descriptors.
Yeah, super detailed. I was like, why don't you just say his name, right? I'm pretty sure his name was Brian. But it was such a great conversation. It was the very first time I had ever heard the word. I got it immediately.
Me too.
Because that was exactly what I saw and was attracted to. And so if you're still unclear on what that means, it's very much the idea of like what real wealth doesn't look like. Mm-hmm. One of the most popular examples, even though I cringe every time I see it, is one of those memes where you see Bill Gates,
and he doesn't have on a Gucci belt.
Not a Gucci belt inside or something like that. Or another one that I've seen is sort of the earlier images of Jay-Z when he was a young rapper next to some of the older images of him, right? Where he doesn't really care, apparently, about some of those finer sort of visual
representations. He does. It's just not noticeable to an untrained eye.
Correct. And for me, I think that's something that I have always been drawn to for a completely different set of reasons.
Right.
But now that we are in this advantageous position of our life, it's something and it's an idea that I really wanted to help to share and spread and more people to kind of stand and rally behind.
Yeah, I call it the money can't buy this effect,
right?
Like it's important that you know that it doesn't mean that you never get to buy yourself anything nice. Like if you want the Gucci belt, go get you one. If you want the YSL bag or the Louis, whatever, go get it. But it does mean that you develop almost this sensitivity to advertising. You know when you're being marketed to. You know when somebody else wants you to have it more than you want it yourself. And you start to listen to your voice more. And so the wealth is more stealth because it's important to you. It may not be important to everybody else, but you have the things that are important to you.
Yeah. It also brings me back to the conversation we had last night, where we were reflecting back on our own journey for a variety of reasons, right? But we were watching, you know, maybe other couples do this too. We were watching like a resort video because we just came back from a really great vacation down in Orlando. We stayed at a luxury hotel. Mm-hmm. We had a great experience. It was wildly expensive.
Yeah.
And it was difficult not to notice that, right? But what we were really discussing and talking about was like what luxury means and what it means to us now. And if we'd watched this video, that same video 10 years ago, we would have reacted very differently. We would have absolutely just call it a bucket list vacation, right? But when you do it once, you start to realize That was it?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, if you've had one $20 cocktail, you've had them all.
Like, right? And so it's something that we just want to share with people. I'm sure there are some people who have had that experience and they win it every single time. I'm a bit more confident that if you're a fan of what we do and what we stand for, you understand that this actually, you know, that money could have better been spent doing other things, mm-hmm. right? And that doesn't always mean saving and investing, but you start to recognize that, all right, some of the stuff is a bit over the top. It's a bit extreme. And to your point, it's like not even really worth the markup. And so it's about saying, all right, what can we do? What are the parts of this experience or any experience that I really, really enjoy? Spend on those things, but don't lock yourself into buying all of the nicer things, having all of the nicer things all of the time, especially if those things are coming at a cost to your ability to save and invest for the future.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so that was one excerpt. I'm going to read the next one. This is from chapter 4, which is one of my favorite chapters. I also believe it's going to be one of the chapters that sparks quite a bit of controversy and discussion just because we know how this works. We know people are going to say, that's ridiculous and all kinds of things. But the title is, the title of the chapter is called The 15-Year Career, and that's exactly what it sounds like. It's, we are proposing that that is the appropriate length for working professionals. Obviously, we add some nuance and layers to it, but that's essentially what we're walking people through, how to think about it, sharing our own experience and some of the experiences of a few others who have managed to accomplish just that. In it, we talk about our experience as real estate investors and how we had to break some of the rules in the process. And so what we really wanted to do at the end of this particular chapter is give people some advice and some counsel around how to think about their own careers, how to supplement that with other income and use that to essentially shorten the timeline. So I'm going to read from the end of the 15-year career. Looking back, if we had to point to just one thing that helped us as successful real estate investors, it would have very little to do with our natural born intellect or academic achievement. No, what made our real estate investing experience a successful one was the fact that we could manage the cost of ownership if needed. Our ability to comfortably carry the second mortgage was a greater contributor to our success than our ability to find properties and analyze deals. And this wouldn't have been possible had we not spent the early part of our careers living frugally to pay down debt. If we'd chosen to move into a larger home and purchase new vehicles instead, we wouldn't have had the surplus cash to make a down payment, and our creditworthiness would have been less attractive to lenders. Finding and honing a niche can be the spark you need to eventually earn your way out of a job. As you try to climb in your career, you will undoubtedly hit some roadblocks, and it may be tempting to take them personally. Quite frankly, you may be well within your right to feel that way, but don't let feeling slighted overshadow the larger mission. Instead, funnel that frustration into something productive, something that appreciates in value, something that will eventually free you.
That still gives me chills. Like, and just so you know, the 15-year career is broken into three different 5-year sprints. And the second sprint is about acquiring skills that you can monetize or sell outside of your current employer.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that the skills that they acquire at work are specifically for that employer.
Yeah.
You learn how to read P&Ls, you learn how to do financial modeling, you learn how to create sales and marketing decks, and then you only use that skill at work from 9 to 5. And what we're suggesting in this book is that you actually take that skill and apply it to real estate, apply it to buying other assets that appreciate in value, or even just lend it as a consulting to a small business or a freelance, you know, a freelance position with any company. And so I just love this section of the book because I think people take themselves out of the game so quickly. They think they don't have enough information. The thing that they want to invest in doesn't perfectly meet all of the rules of thumb. Right. And we're just saying, like, do it anyway. Like, don't be reckless, right? That nuance is in the book, not in this excerpt. But, like, don't be reckless. But sometimes you have to lean on the skills that you have that are internal, that aren't valued the same way that other skills are.
Yeah. And we say, we use the words, which is intentionally jarring, but in reference to a lot of Americans, that many of us are one-trick ponies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have been taught and trained to be good employees. And that's fine. But for most people, that's not sustainable, right?
Right.
After a while, you're going to get burned out. Your skills will become obsolete.
Yeah.
You will be replaced, or the value that is placed on the skill set that you provide by that or to that one employer or that one industry will be diminished. And it's part of the things that rubs up against the fact that people haven't saved as much as they could.
Exactly.
And this is when they end up in their 40s or their 50s. For some people, it's even sooner, where they're really kicking themselves and wishing that they had tried something different earlier in their career. And what we found is the people who took advantage of those early years and said, you know what, I'm going to use this time strategically to either pay down debt, or if I don't have debt, I'm going to invest significantly higher than the standard rule of thumb. They end up in a position where when they are hit with that disruption, whatever that disruption is, it could be industry collapse, it could be a pandemic, it could be, hey,
it could just be a change of heart.
Have twins.
Yeah,
right?
And now exactly. It could be something happened in your life that changes the way that you feel about your profession. Educators are going through this right now. Healthcare professionals are going through this right now, where it's like they're so burned out. And what a 15-year career framework allows you to do is, if you've been in the game even, 11 years, 8 years, you've likely already gone through the phases where you've saved up. You've created a frugal lifestyle, and you've already started investing, and you have brokerage accounts outside of your traditional retirement accounts, so you can tap into them to invest in yourself, right? You have some of these tools along the way so that when you are at this existential crisis, you don't have to just keep powering through something that makes you miserable.
Right.
You can get off, take a little break, you've earned it, and start again. Like, I think people think the 15-year career is not viable because we're asking you to retire at the end of 15 years. And it's like, no, the point is to cash out.
Right.
You could do what you want with whatever your winnings are from that period of your life. You can start another career, you can start a business, but the point is to be in a position to walk away when you're done.
Right, right. There's so much there. And again, I really think this is going to be the chapter that a lot of people are really struck by. Some of the people who've had advanced copies of the book have already kind of placed or self-identified with that framework. It was like, oh no, I totally get it, which I'm really proud of, because I think when we first came up with the idea or coined the term, we kind of felt like, all right, people are going to, they're going to destroy us. They're going to say this is ridiculous. But I guess the silver lining of the last couple of years is that as the pandemic has kind of forced people into remote work or hybrid work, and really just to confront the realities of the cost of work, the emotional cost, the physical cost, the financial cost of working, if you've got a long commute or you have to maintain certain beauty standards or all of these kinds of things, people are really starting to think about their relationship with work differently.
Absolutely.
And I think this particular framework really helps people to put an end date or at least a target date in mind that helps to adjust their moves a little differently. But I think there's another layer to this, and we didn't talk about it in that particular excerpt, but we've spoken about it before. One of the benefits of kind of following this framework or this process of a 15-year career is that as you go through the process of monetizing skills outside of work, you now have an income source to compare your existing income source to. So let's say you're making $90,000, right? Most people would love to make $90,000, but your goal is to get to $100,000. I'm telling you right now from my own experience that you're going to run into two situations. You're going to have a particular job that's available, and you're going to have to do whatever it takes to get that job, right? You may have to knock it out of the park. You may have to crush all of your KPOs. You're going to have to network a little differently than you have in the past. You might need to get an additional certification. You may have to be interviewing. You may have to do all of the things that I think most professionals who are earning income at that level know is required in order for you to get the next big job or to get the next big promotion. Or if you're following the process that we've identified, you might just need to sell like a couple products.
Yeah.
You might just need to create a $20 product.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people have seen that, that grid where it's like, you want to make an extra $10,000, you can do these things. And this is where that 6 to 9, 6 to 10, those nights and those weekends come in really handy in terms of how you manage your time and how you leverage your expertise. Mm-hmm. Because when you do that and you're presented with the opportunity or the job becomes available, and it's like, you know what, I think I want that. Now, instead of just looking at the money, it was like, well, what is it going to require for me to actually get that? It was like, do I have to take on more stress? Do I now need to manage more people? Mm-hmm. Does this mean I'm going to have to be in the office longer? Does this mean that I'm going to have to completely adjust my wardrobe because now I'm going to be among the directors or the senior managers and this is the social norm that's required? Does this mean I'm going to be traveling more, which means now I need to get TSA pre-check clear and new luggage and, again, a new wardrobe that's more suited for people that travel. And so all of those things combined, I think, are sort of rolled into that particular chapter, but I think help people to focus on why it's so important to create income sources outside or in addition to their primary sources of income. Because when you have something to compare it to, you're much more effective at making the decision about whether or not getting that promotion or getting that job is actually an opportunity or if it's something that's just going to drain more and more of your energy and your time.
Yes, love it. So the last excerpt is from one of my favorite chapters. It feels wrong to pick a favorite chapter. It's like picking a favorite kid. Like, I love them all,
but
I
do. We only have one kid.
I know.
And we only have one book, so it's okay.
So this chapter is about finding your FI community. And it talks about our lessons in trying to make our friends and family adopt this way of life and what are the benefits of having a community. If you've listened to this podcast before, you know we feel like community is our, you know, superpower. So I'm going to read an excerpt from that chapter. It's on page 210. Finding a community of people with financial philosophies that are in accord with yours will help you feel less like a weirdo for seeing the world the way you do. Going through the process of debt payoff and building wealth can be a lonely experience if you don't have folks in your corner who truly understand you. Consider the role support groups play in helping people recover from an injury, bereavement, or trauma. While those all may sound extreme, you could make a case that the student loan crisis, the pending retirement crisis, and exposure to social oppression will all require some degree of mental and emotional support. Quite frankly, you could make the case that the constant barrage of advertising Americans are exposed to is a form of trauma, that the role work plays in our life is a form of addiction, and that our cultural tendency to spend more than we earn is a type of compulsive behavior. So having a community to help you heal and recover is an incredibly valuable tool on your journey to financial independence. I love this chapter because this is the nudge that I would have needed when I started. I think before when I would do things that my family didn't agree with, it was coming from this place of teenage rebellion and like just trying to prove a point that I can handle it.
Yeah.
And pursuing financial independence was the first time that I made a choice as an adult that was good for me that my friends and family didn't understand, didn't naturally like vibe with. And so.
And still don't.
Right.
Yeah. So to say, I think it's important to call that out. You know, I think a lot of people may be looking at us as trailblazers in a way, and that's great. But I think it's important for us to say, listen, there are people in our lives that are very close to us that don't get it, that don't understand, but it's okay, right?
Yeah.
And it's okay for us now, having thought through it and having processed it and also tapped into a community of like-minded people around the world, not just in our neighborhood, but around the world. I just think it makes this a much less lonely process. And it's also one of the reasons why we're making sure that we hit the road, because we want to help
other people
like a
lighthouse
and say, all right, you're not the only person here, right? You don't have to be a weirdo to say, man, have you ever heard of this thing? You ever heard of this couple or what they're doing or anything like that? Like, so when we show up, it's like, all right, yeah, but these are people that are in your backyard.
Exactly.
Right. And you might be surprised. It might be somebody that you,
right.
You
like,
know.
You like
that'd be pretty cool. You know, and we've had other conversations with people who are community leaders and they're like, yeah, that happens. And then the next level is that you become responsible for like matchmaking. And I was like, all right, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going
to
do that.
I'm looking forward to that part. Single people. I'm going to give y'all a special, you know, label name tag to wear to be like, have you met this person?
Yeah. Fi curious. There it is. No, but I also loved this particular chapter for a lot of reasons. I'm just going to pick one. I think it's because it emphasizes something that we are very passionate about, which is to help people just walk away from the ledge of expertise, right? So many people feel like in order for them to achieve their wildest financial dreams, they have to get the next book. They have to read all the books. They have to take all of the courses. They have to go to the conferences. It's like, no, like that is a cycle of learning and consumerism that has been marketed to you as what it means to be a financially stable or successful person. I fundamentally believe that in our book, we've covered the foundational elements, right? If you want to gain expertise, or if your desire more specifically is to teach some of this stuff,
or if you actually want to beat the system versus just matching it, right? Then yeah, you can go on to the 201.
Absolutely.
But just matching the system sets you up to be a millionaire.
Are more than enough. And I think that is the key that is so important. And it really doesn't register in people's brains until they see people that are like-minded. I think it impacts them even more when they see people that look like them that are like-minded. Because I think role modeling has always been so critical. Like, when you can see someone having done something that is countercultural or different, and they came out the other end whole and happy, all of a sudden, I think people are far more willing to walk that same path. And so I hope not only are we acting as role models, but we can help other people find and then serve as role models in their own community.
Amazing. Any other final thoughts or lines that you want to tell the people about the book?
Well, obviously, I think the last chapter is one that I find to be the most powerful.
Yeah, I think I agree with my favorite.
yeah, because I remember where we were emotionally when we were writing it and thinking about how do we sort of give the chef's kiss to this book. But I think it's one of my favorites for sure. I would say the favorite because it just helps walk people away from the fear that they feel, like trying to process this stuff. Like, what if I do this? What will my life be like? How do I deal with all of the confusing information that's going to be tossed at me? How do I deal with myself when the rubber meets the road? And I think what we really tried to do was to kind of equip people with all of the things and just kind of remind them, right? Like, it's okay. Like, you're going to be fine. We told you this was going to happen as you were kind of going through this guide. But look at the other side and trust me that 10 years from now, 15 years from now, you're going to look back and you're going to be happy about the decisions that you're making right now.
Especially if you're surrounded by community that can help you think through creative solutions, give you their playbook, like, oh yeah, that happened to us. Here's what we had to do.
Yep.
Like, it's just, it can be an incredible journey. You just need to sign up.
Yeah. So final thoughts is, look, we are holding the actual physical copy of the book, hardcover. It'll be in stores around the country on June 14th. You can also order it directly if you wanted to just come to your home. Amazon, it will send it straight to you. Any number of online retailers will send it straight to you. But if you actually enjoyed this sort of reading experience and you've never done an audiobook before, you can do that through Audible. Audible is an audiobook company. It is actually a subsidiary of Amazon. So if you have Amazon Prime and you don't already have Audible, guess what? You can probably get a free 30-day trial. So if you go to audible.com, you basically link your Amazon account. You can get a free trial. You can buy cashing out. You can listen to this sort of reading experience. Kirsten and I take turns chapter by chapter, part by part in some cases. But I think it's a really great way for those people who might be bored by reading an actual book, but now you can listen to a book. No, I think our book is pretty funny and, you know, it's all the things. So yeah, something to think about.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you like what you heard, go buy my book. And then on your way over to the next screen, please leave us a 5-star rating review on Apple Podcasts, as well as wherever your book is purchased. We will see y'all next week.